Welcome back to Blueprint for Wealth. This is Wayne Zell, and with me today is my very special guest, Ambassador Peter Thiele. Welcome, Pete.
Nice to be with you again, Wayne. Thank you.
Thanks so much for being on the show today. A little bit of background on Ambassador Thiele. He was press secretary for a variety of U.S. senators before becoming director of communications in the Republican National Committee, and then became press secretary for Vice President George Bush, went into private practice, and became press secretary for Vice President Bush again during his presidential campaign. Ultimately became U.S. representative to UNICEF, and then became U.S. ambassador to Canada before becoming senior vice president of government affairs for Amgen, the big biotech company. And Ambassador Thiele is now retired, but he's really not retired, and we're going to talk a lot about what he's doing with the Children's Charities Foundation. You know, let's go back a little bit, Pete. The press secretary role that you served for Vice President Bush, do you have any great war stories that you could tell us about your experiences with the vice president?
Well, I suppose I have a lot of war stories. I'm not sure I want to tell them.
The listeners could listen to and appreciate.
I'll tell you, it's not a war story. It's really kind of a compliment to George Bush. He was a wonderful person to work for or with, and he would always go the extra mile. He had good common sense, but he treated people well. There was great loyalty to him. He had this fabulous sense of humor. He was always trying to tell a joke.
Is that right?
Yeah. In fact, there was a lot of reporters that used to call him and ask if he had any off-color jokes.
And try to throw him off a little bit.
Occasionally he would. I'll tell you one story that was interesting. It was in 1984 in the presidential campaign when Ronald Reagan was president. And we went out to Denver. And we had some kind of an event out there. I can't remember. But we're checking into this hotel. And Mr. Bush looked across the lobby. And he saw a former famous baseball player by the name of Bob Feller. He knew Bob Feller.
Oh, sure.
And he walked across, and they talked for a while, and it turned out that there was a game that evening, basically of the old greats playing against a minor league team.
Right.
Feller said to Bush, you want to play? And Bush, who was a very, very good baseball first baseman, said, yeah, I'll play. So anyway, after that was over, we're walking across, and I looked at him. I said, what are you thinking about? He said, what do you mean? I said, you haven't played baseball in 25 years. You're going to look pretty silly out there. And he said, well, we'll see. He went out there that day, got a hit, and turned a double play from first to second back to first.
Wow.
And one of the Hall of Famers looked at another fellow and said, you know, this guy really knows the game. And
that is interesting.
Yeah, he did great. He really did.
That is interesting. And then you went on to serve as the U.S. representative to UNICEF. What was your role there? What did you do? And it obviously started getting you involved in charitable work very heavily at that point in time. Tell us a little bit about what you did while you were the U.S. representative to UNICEF.
Well, basically, UNICEF tries to work on consensus. And you know, it's not as straight and narrow as it may seem, in the sense that everybody wants to help those in need in less developed countries, particularly.
Right.
But there are times when politics gets into the situation. There was one in particular where the representative from I believe it was Egypt. Put in a resolution to spend additional funds for Palestinian children living in the West Bank and the Gaza.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I had to object to that. And as I say, we tried to work by consensus. And I was looking around, and in the back of the room, there was a representative from the Palestinian Liberation Organization.
Okay.
An organization we weren't supposed to talk to.
Right.
And anyway, I walked to the back of the room, and I looked at this guy, and I said, let's go outside and have a cigarette. Those are the days when I smoked.
When you still smoked, yeah.
Yeah, we went out there, and I talked to him. I said, look, I'm going to introduce this resolution, and I'm going to broaden it from the Gaza and the West Bank to Lebanon, Syria, Egypt, Saudi Arabia, all the Middle East countries. And I said, if I do this, you got to back me.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, I'll back you.
Okay.
And anyways, it turns out that there was a flurry of activity with the representatives from the Arab states. They accepted it. And up until that time, it was the only resolution in the United Nations that passed with the support of the Israelis and the Arab bloc.
Fantastic.
Yeah, it was it was
a
nice
unique
thing.
Opportunity to help people and still achieve a political end. And you were also U.S. ambassador to Canada. Aren't you from Canada originally?
No, I was born in England.
You were born in England. So
yes.
What was the connection to Canada?
Well, I'll tell you what the connection was. In 1991, I was discovered to have colon cancer. And it was a stage 3 situation, and it was a very, very tough chemotherapy regimen that I had received. And I was thinking to myself, you know, you've been in business for a while. Maybe you need a change of pace, and you ought to do something in government. And I thought, well, maybe I can run one of the smaller agencies or departments. So I picked up the phone. I called Jim Baker, who then was the Secretary of State.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, well, come on over, let's have lunch. So I went over there and I talked to him and one thing and another. And when I left, it took me about 20 minutes to get back to my office. I no sooner walked into the office than the phone rang. And it was Margaret Tutwiler, who was assistant secretary at that time for Jim Baker. And she said, Pete, Mr. Baker would like to know if you'd like to be an ambassador. And I said, Margaret, I really wouldn't. But on the other hand... On the other hand, what's available? There were about 15 countries that were coming up, including Canada, and I decided to choose Canada because of the my health situation.
Sure.
That if anything really went wrong,
I was
an hour away. Yes, and that was the reason why Canada became my place, and I enjoyed it. The Canadian people were terrific. You know, it's a really great experience to represent your country abroad.
And we thank you for your service. And one thing that you brought up that you and I share in common, we're both cancer survivors, but you now 20 years have survived cancer. And you wrote a book about your experiences with that.
I did. And it was 1991 with colon cancer. Then 6 years ago, I went to the doctor for my annual physical, and at the very end, as doctors do, they say, open your mouth and say, ah, which I did, and she had a compressor, and she's looking there, and she says, you know, you got something in the back of your throat, and I said, like what? And she said, like a tumor.
Oh, Lord.
And she was right. So I went to Georgetown University Hospital to see Dr. John Marshall. I went to Sibley Hospital, I went to MD Anderson, and they all basically prescribed the same thing. I was fortunate in the sense that it was discovered early, and it was a stage one situation, but you don't want any stage.
Mm-mm.
And what was interesting, I was driving on a Friday afternoon, I was supposed to begin radiation the following Monday, and I received a call from MD Anderson, from a doctor, who said to me, we just have the results in of a trial for advanced head and neck cancer patients. And it's really a combination of radiation and a drug called Erbitux. And he says, is there somebody in Washington that can give you the Erbitux? I said, yeah. I said, the problem that I have is I don't have advanced head or neck cancer. He says, I know, but you've got nothing to lose. So as it turns out, I started radiation on Monday. On that Wednesday, I had the Erbitux at Georgetown. By the beginning of next week, half the tumor was gone.
Unbelievable.
I had the Erbitux and the radiation the following week, and the tumor was totally gone. And the doctor said, this has nothing to do with the radiation. This has everything to do with the Erbitux, yes. And... that was the good news. The bad news is I still had to do 5 more weeks of radiation, And, you know, after having chemotherapy, I thought that radiation would be pretty easy to get through. It was a lot more difficult than I thought. And even today, it's affected a lot. It's affected my voice, my taste buds, my salivary glands. Mm-hmm. So it's life is a little bit different in that respect. But I'm healthy. I feel great. I've got tons of energy, and I'm thankful.
And you're chairman of the Children's Charities Foundation, which was founded in 1994. Tell us a little bit about your passion for children's charities, what led you to start the charity, and where it is today.
Well, you know, when I was ill in 1991, I had the surgery for to remove a section of the colon. Actually, I went in because my appendix was infected. As it turns out, that what was irritating the appendix was a tumor.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, that was taken out. Then there was a complication after the surgery. I had additional surgery. And then there was an enormous complication at that point in time. And I was in intensive care for nearly 3 weeks. But anyway, when I got out of that, and I was in my room, and I was thinking about things. And I thought to myself, you know, you've been pretty lucky in life. You're an immigrant. You've been successful. It's time for you to start doing something to help other people. And I thought and I thought and I said, you know, to myself, this is a great city and area for basketball.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be great to put on a basketball tournament where you could generate revenue to provide charities that provide the services to at-risk children in the area. And that's really kind of how it came about as far as an idea. And then when I came back from Canada, I started working on that with a number of individuals, and we got it going, including yourself. And we have been fairly successful in the last 16 years. We've given away more than $8 million to charities.
$8 million?
$8 million,
to yes. local charities.
Yeah, I wish it was a lot more, but...
Wow.
That's where we are.
And it's fueled by the annual tournament, which it was originally a four teams that would play off and then there would
yes.
be a championship. It's a different format now, isn't it?
It's a different format. We have the games on one day, and there's a long, complicated reason for it. But we're all set for this year, 2011.
Who do we have?
Well, we've got Maryland playing Notre Dame.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, we have Virginia Tech playing Temple.
Fantastic.
And we've got George Washington playing Virginia Commonwealth.
Excellent.
And they may be the best team in the tournament, actually.
And this could be one of the better tournaments fields that I've heard of in 16 years.
Yeah, it will be. You know, it's funny. You bring in good teams, especially with names, and it makes all the difference in the world in terms of selling tickets. Bring in Villanova.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they could come in with a fair team, but everybody recognizes Villanova as a really top-flight program.
Right.
You'll sell 4,000 tickets more than you would
otherwise.
Otherwise, that's right. That's right.
Now, the Children's Charities Foundation is supporting children's charities all around the Washington, D.C. area, not just in Washington, but Northern Virginia, Maryland, D.C., that are helping disadvantaged and at-risk youth. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And in order for a charity to participate in the largesse of the Children's Charities Foundation, you basically have to be nominated and receive some acknowledgement from the board members. How would a charity get in touch with us to find out more about being able to tap into the funds that are available through the Children's Charities Foundation?
Well, I'll tell you, without soliciting a lot of charities to call, it's actually pretty straightforward. Charities are nominated by board members who have some familiarity with the charity.
Right.
We send out information to them to find out really what they would use the money for, what program or situation that they're involved in. And then we make a decision in terms of does this charity qualify? And if so, how much money do we want to provide?
Right. And the tournament has been supported by BB&T Bank for many, many years. Will it continue to be the sponsor of the tournament?
Yes, it will. And the bank has been fabulous. It is one of the really great corporate citizens in this area, and they don't get nearly the credit that they deserve.
Well, we're running out of time. I just wanted to thank you for, one, being a special guest on Blueprint for Wealth, but more importantly, for all of the effort that you've made for children's charities and helping children's charities in and around the Washington, D.C. metro area. Thank you so much.
Thanks very much for having me, Wayne. Good to see you.
Good to see you, too. And thanks for listening to Blueprint for Wealth. Tune in next week for another special topic and special guest.